Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Welcome to Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. And remember, Free for All Friday is a trademark, patented, copywritten. I own this phrase, and if I see you say Free for All Friday anywhere, I'm going to sue you into oblivion. Nah, I'm just kidding. I have not done any of the work to try to copyright anything related with my podcast. Maybe I should here at some point. Because apparently, if you get enough copyrights and trademarks, you can legally own almost any kind of intellectual property and sue people if they use it or misappropriate it or just even imitate it in some circumstances. So that is what I would like to talk to you about today. For those of you who are newer to the podcast, Monday through Thursday, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith. But on Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about because it's Free for All Friday. And I thought it'd be interesting to talk about copyright, trademarks, intellectual property, but specifically things that are copywritten that you may not be familiar with. And if you make a public misstep with these things, you can actually be sued by very large entities like Marvel Comics or the Nation of France or other people like that. So let's jump into some of the things that you may not have known about their copyright status. So the first thing I want to talk about here is the Eiffel Tower. And specifically, it is taking pictures of the Eiffel Tower at night. You may not know that, but there's a copyright on that. So what does that mean? Now, so copyright applies not just, you know, to works of art, things that are created, you're not allowed to duplicate them. So I have a copyright on my books that I publish through Catholic Answers. I think I forget the exact arrangement I have with them, who owns the copyright. But the point is, you can't make your own copy of Why We're Catholic without the permission of Catholic Answers Press to do that. Otherwise, you violate the intellectual property rights that we have there. Someone creates something. And that's not just books, for example. Famous buildings or sculptures, even pictures of these kinds of things can be subject to copyright law. Now, copyright, though, is also balanced with something called public domain that people have recognized for a while that eventually an idea, once enough time has passed, usually when the original creator of the work has died, so it's usually like 70 or 100 years or something like that. When the original creator of the work has passed on, the work can now be said to belong into public domain, can belong to everyone for them to use, and no harm comes to the original person who created the work because they're no longer with us. They were given time to enrich themselves, but now the work enters the public domain. That's why a lot of famous stories, for example, like the Hans Christian Andersen stories, are in the public domain, and they're adapted by people like Disney. What's funny is, like, you can put on a production of, you know, Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid, but you can't do the Disney version of The Little Mermaid because you'll be sued into oblivion. So because one's in the public domain, one isn't. I think this happens with Peter Pan as well. I think the original Peter Pan story is in public domain, but the Disney version. So if you try to do it in a way that resembles unique things Disney added to the story, then you're going to be in big legal trouble. So this applies then also to buildings like the Eiffel Tower. So how in the world does that work? Now, copyright law, by the way, is different in different countries. So in the European Union, which would cover copyright for French works of art or the Eiffel Tower, copyright law holds for 70 years after the creator has passed away. So it can go on for quite a long time. In other countries, in Pakistan, it's as low as 50 years. In Jamaica, man, 95 years you have to wait, man. So Gustav Eiffel, who designed the Eiffel Tower, who held the copyright for the Eiffel Tower itself, he died in 1923. So in 1993, the Eiffel Tower, the building itself, the Eiffel Tower building, went into public domain. That's why you can make Eiffel Tower shirts, you can have an Eiffel Tower restaurant in Las Vegas, and you don't have to pay anybody anything because it's like the Great Pyramids. You know, it's just this thing, this building that exists in the public domain for anyone to use as they see fit. That was 70 years after Gustav Eiffel died in 1923. Then it became 1993. The Eiffel Tower entered the public domain. However, the lights. And I've been to the Eiffel Tower. It's beautiful. Although I've only seen it during the day. My wife and I went there 10 years ago on our honeymoon, and I reserved tickets. So there was like a 3-hour line to get in the Eiffel Tower, and we just hopped right in the express elevator and got up there. At the top of the Eiffel Tower, what's funny is there are these creepy mannequins that look like Thomas Edison and Gustav Eiffel and other people at the very top. So it's kind of weird and funny. Beautiful view, though. It's a neat monument. Definitely check it out if you're there in Paris. I only saw it during the day. But here's the thing. It's the Eiffel Tower at night that's copywritten. It says here that lights on the Eiffel Tower were installed in 1985 by Pierre Bidou. I'm butchering everything here. Pierre Bidou, 1985, installed lights on the Eiffel Tower. And so his unique installation of the lights on it constitute a unique work of art. Not the building itself, but the arrangement of the lights. So the arrangement of the lights is a work of art, and it's copywritten. And you need permission then to photograph or videotape the Eiffel Tower if it is done at night. If you do that without permission, you're in violation of copyright law in France, and you can actually be sued even if you live in another country that doesn't recognize these particular kinds of copyright restrictions. So take pictures all you want. Now, if you take a picture of the Eiffel Tower at night and you put it on your Facebook, probably nobody's going to care. Really, it's more for artists. Like if you make a commercial print and you sell a beautiful picture of the Eiffel Tower at night, you got to pay royalties on that. Similar thing that's happened is the Hollywood sign. Now, the Hollywood sign in Hollywood, California, the big, you know, big white letters, Hollywood, it has been I think it's Culver City Chamber of Commerce has tried very hard over many years to trademark the sign. So trademark is a little different than copyright. And we'll get to that. Copyright covers particular works of art and prevents the unauthorized duplication of those typically works of art. Trademark is the protection of things like logos or names that you would associate with a brand. So, like, I can't open a burger stand and call it McDonald's Fine Burgers because people might think that it's a kind of McDonald's, you know? And so it protects that company's image and name from being used for products that they're not associated with. No, never mind. What am I thinking? It's the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce. Why did I think Culver City Chamber of Commerce? So the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce, because Hollywood is a city, has tried to insist there are trademark rights to the particular Hollywood sign and how it looks. And so they've gone out, they've threatened to sue the use of the Hollywood sign in a student film, in advertising campaigns. There's a British YouTuber, Tom Scott, does a lot of great videos. He did a video about the Hollywood sign. He like blurs it out when he's talking about it to avoid being sued. They've gone to court a few times, and their applications for trademark, I think, have been denied, and the courts have struck it down. But they'll still send cease and desist letters to people who try to use pictures of the Hollywood sign or even animations of it to try to say, no, we own the particular, like to trademark the name of a place. You can't really do that unless the name is very firmly established to a particular kind of product. So you can't trademark California. I have the California store, and so I own the name California. No, you can't do that. But you can trademark the name California Pizza Kitchen or Arrowhead Water. If to say, oh, well, people associate that with a particular brand, and so they've used the brand for a while, it's been associated in the public consciousness, and so that's something that comes up with. And that's what Hollywood has tried to say, oh, if you call it Hollywood popcorn, they'll think that the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce is involved, and a lot of the courts don't really buy those kinds of arguments. But other things that you can trademark that are interesting that I didn't know about are colors. So there are specific, not just names of places or people, but businesses can own a trademark on particular colors. Now, it's usually pretty limited. So, for example, think of Tiffany's, the jewelry store. It's a very light blue, classy kind of blue, Audrey Hepburn blue, the Breakfast at Tiffany's. Tiffany blue is trademarked by Tiffany's. Now, it's restricted to jewelry stores. So if you opened up, you know, a turpentine factory and called it, that was the color you used for your turpentine, they wouldn't have a case against you. But if you were a rival jewelry store, then you might they might have a case. Similar with T-Mobile. So think about T-Mobile. What's the first thing that pops in your mind when you think of T-Mobile? That kind of gaudy, bright, magenta, pinkish, you know, magenta color of T-Mobile. They own the trademark on that particular hue of magenta and have successfully sued other phone companies from using that magenta. They sued Telia, a Swedish cell company, because they say, look, if you think of cell phones in magenta, that's T-Mobile. And other people, they will be capitalizing on us and infringing on our business. Other copywritten, or sorry, trademarked colors are Barbie pink, Cadbury purple. Another one is UPS brown. That was done when the trucks were painted back in 1916. They were done because that kind of brown on the UPS trucks, which is not, you know, it's not the nicest color. That was Pullman brown. That was like the high-end brown. If you were a richy rich person, your train car was Pullman brown or whatever it may be. So they painted the trucks that back in 1916, and they trademarked the color in 1998. So if you start a delivery service, you cannot use the very, very dark brown that UPS uses. Canary yellow is similar. You make Post-it notes, can't be that same canary yellow. Or if you're a stationery company, you can't use canary yellow as your trademark color. They 3M color marked it. And actually, back in the day, they came up with canary yellow because when they were experimenting with sticky notes, the designers, that was the only color of scrap paper they had. It was canary yellow. Another one is Reese's orange. If you look on, think about Reese's peanut butter cups, okay? Think of it in your head. Have you ever seen that color of orange anywhere else? I haven't. It's a particular kind of bright orange, right? We only see it, especially like around Halloween. But most orange that's used at Halloween decorations is a darker orange. But it's not a super bright orange. It's not tangerine. It's a very, very particular shade of orange that Reese's uses. And you'll see on there that it says the color of the Reese's package is trademarked. Not just the name Reese's, but that orange. So if you were a candy company, you cannot use that same kind of orange, which is funny because candy is at Halloween. Orange and black are Halloween colors. Pretty smart, Reese's. That's very smart. Here's another one. Superhero. So the word superhero is trademarked. And who do you think it's trademarked by? Marvel and DC. So Marvel Comics and DC Comics trademarked the word superhero. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean you and I can't say superhero without getting sued. And it also doesn't mean that if you're an independent artist, you can't write a story. And in the story, someone says, wow, you're a real superhero now. What it means is you, if you're creating in the comic book industry and you're not Marvel or DC, you cannot use the word superhero in your product name or the description of your product. So, or at the very least, in the product name and the subtitle, you can't use the word superhero. Like, I couldn't just start a comic called The Amazing Superheroes. If I started that, I could be sued by Marvel and DC for trademark. They own superhero. You might be thinking, how in the world could they own superhero? And the reason they own it is, once again, trademark deals with, has a company, has something, because it could be anything vague, like a color or a particular word. Has it been associated with that particular product? And the test for Marvel and DC is this, and here's my test for you. Can you think of a superhero that is not owned by Marvel or DC Comics? Can you? You probably can't. I can barely think of some. I think of like The Shadow, Todd McFarlane's Spawn, Hellboy, but there's not a lot of them. And some of them, like Captain Marvel, aka Shazam, I believe he was created by Fawcett Comics, but then he was acquired by Marvel. So you have heroes, superheroes that were created by other companies, then Marvel and DC bought them out. So the problem is, when you ask most regular people, name a superhero, they'll name a character from Marvel or DC Comics. And so it was easy for Marvel and DC to win the trademark on superhero because of where the public is at on that question. And it's interesting, they both realized that if they tried to sue each other, they're too big. That if either Marvel or DC tried to get superhero for themselves, they would sue each other into oblivion. It would be mutually assured destruction. So they decided to team up to both own superhero and keep everybody else out of the game. So that's, you know, that superhero is trademarked by Marvel and DC. Last copyright's interesting. This is no longer copywritten. It is in public domain. But for a very long time, it was a subject of copyright. And it made a headache for people. And that would be the song Happy Birthday to You. So Happy Birthday to You comes from the late 19th century. Two sisters, Patty and Mildred Hill, introduced the song. They created the song from a previously existing melody and lyric called Good Morning to All. So that song would go, good morning to you, good morning to you, good morning, dear children, good morning to all. And so that was Good Morning to All is the song. Good morning, not good morning to you, good morning to all. So they took Good Morning to All and they set the lyrics to Happy Birthday over it. It was published in their 1893 songbook, Song Stories for the Kindergarten by Clayton Summey. That was back in 1893. Other people claim to have the rights to songs, made similar songs related to it. It says here, you could find it in a lot of different places. Eventually, one company sought the copyright to it, and eventually, oh, that was Warner Chapel Music. So they purchased, so the Summey Company registered the copyright in 1935. Warner Chapel Music bought Summey Company in 1988 for $25 million. And it was presumed included in that was the rights to Happy Birthday, which were valued at about $5 million. And so what that meant was that since like 1998, Warner Chapel Music, in owning the copyright to Happy Birthday, meant if you publicly saying Happy Birthday in a commercial context, they could require royalties. They typically required, I think it was something like $700 every time that the song was used. So that's why, if you notice, I think this was the reason, if you went to like Applebee's or something like that and it was your birthday, the servers didn't sing Happy Birthday. They'd be like, happy, happy birthday, we only want to do happy, happy birthday. They don't sing Happy Birthday. There was actually a comedy show a while back where one of the news anchors, he sings Happy Birthday to his co-host, and then he almost gets fired because the company gets sued because you can't say Happy Birthday on the air. So you'll notice in a lot of works of film, television, they avoid saying Happy Birthday. Like they'll sing a different song. They'll say For He's a Jolly Good Fellow, or they'll just skip it because they don't want to pay to use the song. And so because of that, it's been estimated that Happy Birthday is the highest earning single song in history, royalty-wise, because they owned it. But then later, this went to court, and I believe in 2017, the copyright expired in Europe. 2015, the courts struck down. There was a lawsuit that was filed in 2013 by a documentary filmmaker, Jennifer Nelson, on the song Happy Birthday. And so I think the courts eventually ruled in 2015, federal judge George King ruled Warner Chappell's copyright claim over the lyrics was invalid. They said because Warner Chappell bought Summey in 1988, 1935, when the copyright was issued, they said that looking at it, the original copyright was only for a specific piano arrangement of Happy Birthday, not for the lyrics or the melody to Happy Birthday. So now Happy Birthday belongs in the public domain and you can sing it and you just find, oh, actually, I noticed here, not $700. You might think, oh, $700 is not that bad. Why don't the companies just pay it? In some instances, it was $700, but in a documentary called The Corporation, it says that Warner Chappell charged up to $10,000 for a television show or a film that would include Happy Birthday into it. $10,000. So at that point, you're thinking, For He's a Jolly Good Fellow, For He's a Jolly Good Fellow. So that is was the decision of wanting to get around that. And now the song is in the public domain. You have nothing to fear. And because of the 2015 court judgment, Warner Chappell had to pay back $14 million in licensing fees over Happy Birthday. So I hope that's helpful for you all. Hope you enjoyed this Free For All Friday. And yeah, I hope that you just have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.